Stand back! There's a hurricane coming through!
Paul Kuharski from PaulKuharski.com with us for the next hour talking all things Titans. A lot of your thoughts, your questions already rolling in. Keep them coming at 615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025. A lot of support for PK on the text line. Says keep going.
Let's read some.
Keep asking the questions. Keep going. Chip from Mount Juliet says, Callahan misses the point on removing players from practice. It's called discipline. Also, players can get hurt in those bad hits and fights. Idiotic comment, he said there. Brian says, keep asking the tough questions, PK. You're the eyes and ears for the fans, since fans aren't allowed in. Hate that you have to take the arrows for all of Nashville sports media. You are the best. Gene from Spring Hill says, love it, Paul. Seeing Jeff beat himself up, it's priceless. We have another one that says, PK is always the one asking the tough questions. Love you, PK. A lot of support for PK on the text line.
I hope you're all at PaulKuharski.com. Thank you.
Check it out.
Look, I mean, this isn't a matter of – I just want to reiterate. Like, a lot of people think – I want to reiterate about the press conferences, right? I know everybody thinks the press conference is a TV show and that like, everything asked there is I don't want to say everything asked there is not super important, but some of it for all of us is attempting to go down a path, and some of it is not fruitful. So those things with Callahan were informative to a degree,
yep.
But you know, and maybe tweet worthy, but they didn't turn into anything big for me. Maybe they're big for somebody else. And there is a decent percentage of stuff. Now, Callahan's excellent. Callahan's excellent with the media. But still, there's a percentage of stuff, and this is how press conferences have always worked, where you might ask something. John Glennon was asking Denard Wilson about Daryl Baker yesterday because he's looking for an honest assessment of Daryl Baker, who is definitely sinking.
Yeah.
He did not get an honest assessment of Daryl Baker. Therefore, what you heard Denard Wilson say about Daryl Baker yesterday in your TV show from a press angle were just like two questions that end up being thrown away in the big picture. Or if Glennon, in writing about Daryl Baker, uses them, they would be framed in a certain way that gives them context about how Denard Wilson wasn't going there.
Yeah.
But in terms of the TV show, they weren't important. They proved fruitless.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. So we'll continue to take your thoughts on that. 615-737-1025. I do want to get to a story that you did this week on the offensive line, because it's been a big talking point in camp so far, just the improvement of the offensive line. I think there are limitations, and Callahan essentially said this the other day, limitations to what the pass protection has meant to this point, given the fact that they have seen largely backups to this point in the preseason. But look, they've gotten good work in the joint practices and all those things, and it's encouraging that they've held up as well as they've held up. But you did a story earlier this week about basically the temperament of these guys in the offensive line. They're pretty nice, and then it's required for them to flip that switch on Sundays. What was it like putting that together, and how do you think this offensive line is equipped to be one of those nasty offensive line groups that we've seen the Titans have in the past?
I mean, it remains to be seen if they're nasty enough, but I do think it's I don't dismiss the possibility. I mean, I don't know Zeitler's personality that well. I talked to some people in Baltimore. They said they'd say hard-nosed, but not nasty. But I think hard-nosed maybe can qualify as nasty in today's league, right? I went back and considered, like, John Runyon,
yeah,
who definitely was a nasty guy. I talked to Kevin Mawai, who said, you know, I can tell you that I was regarded as mean and angry and dirty because everybody told me I was.
Right.
Now, Kevin Mawai was a perfectly nice guy as well. He flipped a switch when he was on the line, on the field. Skoronski says, you know, I have no problem being a switch flipper, And I'm not a I'm going to murder you, twist you into the ground, push you over the pile style guy. I think he said something like, I think that the temperament you're talking about can arrive by intensely executing technique. I think that's pretty smart.
Yeah, that's
assessment,
fair.
Right? That can work. But I talked to Jackson Slater, right? He's a draft pick who's I think has a big future here. And he said, I don't think about any of that. I don't think it's important. I go out and do my assignment. And if I do my assignment well, I'm an effective football player. So he's couple generations removed from Kevin Gogan and Kevin Mawai. And he's not thinking about meanness or nastiness or any of that. Now, Bill Callahan preaches nastiness, and particularly with regard to finish.
Yeah.
And so maybe Slater will pick up on some of that. But Slater looks like he's going to be a pretty good football player. But I think that's so far removed. You go back to Conrad Dobler, and what would Conrad Dobler have said about a kid saying, I'm finishing my assignment?
Yeah.
He would have been horrified, right? What would Richie Incognito, who was a maniac, have said about a teammate that said, I'm just going to go out there and finish my assignment? Yeah. So the league has changed drastically. And Dave Ziegler, the Titans assistant general manager who we had access to while we were in Flowery Branch, I asked him about it, and he said, it's just a natural byproduct of high schools and colleges playing more zone and finesse. And it used to be, I'm going to punch you in the mouth and drive you downhill. And there's a lot less of that now. And with that, defenders have changed and offensive linemen have changed, and it's just not the same.
So how much do you think you know and have learned about the offensive line in camp that you think is applicable to the regular season? And how much of that in your mind is still left to be determined? Because they've looked really good so far. How much of that is real and how much of that is there's just no possible way we'll know until week one they roll out there?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the offensive line consistently in one-on-ones against the defensive line, a drill where the defense – look, drills, the aggressive side should always has the advantage and should always win. One-on-ones in the passing game, the receiver has the advantage. He knows where he's going. The quarterback knows where he's going. The corner has to react, right? Yeah. So the ball shouldn't hit the ground very often, and the receiver should have the edge. When he doesn't, that is surprising and an event. In the one-on-ones between the offensive line and the pass rushers and the defensive line, I think the offensive line has consistently done better than expected. So is that good news about the offensive line? Yes. But it's also an indictment of the Titans' pass rushers.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they don't win at all. I'm saying percentage-wise, offensive line does better, I think, than it should, than you would expect. They've looked good in the games. But again, all of this is qualified with a level of competition and no scheme and all of that. So really, I think, you know, that fan tension and anticipation and curiosity – really in Denver.
Yeah.
There's so much unknown, and that is one of the big ones. Both sides of the ball. Well, pass rush and run blocking, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know how good Pollard is, but he should be better with what they can do, and they need more 7-yard runs out of him.
Well, I go back to what you said earlier about a lack of people popping at camp, which I think is totally fair. And it's hard for offensive linemen to really pop in training camp. But I do look at that position and that position group as a whole. And if they're anything close to what they've looked like in the preseason games, and that translates to actual competition, I mean, that's a significant improvement from last year to this year with that group. I don't know that means that they're winning 7 games or whatever, but it feels like that is a position group, And we're going to get to inside linebacker here in just a few minutes. But that's a position group that has a chance to be way better than it was from last year to this year. And I just don't know how many of those position groups exist on this football team right now that have that chance.
Yeah, and frankly, it's conceivable it's the best position group.
Yeah.
Now, not depth-wise. In interior depth, I think there's a chance there. I mean, I think Cushenberry is a bigger up. I like Corey Levin a lot, and I think Corey Levin's very good at what he does. But Cushenberry, you know, helping with protections, I think is maybe a bigger thing than we have thought about, talked about. And, you know, I think Slater is a year away. But if you had to play Slater, that's better than some of your alternatives. Levin and Slater inside, Rupsich maybe your outside, or Hance, an inside-outside swing guy. Tackles, tough call still. So you really have to stay healthy.
I got one texter that says, my excitement is tempered when PK talk about guys popping in the preseason. How about we see a pop in a real game? The Titans are down bad. How long will it take for our terminology go from popping in preseason to camp to confirming our draft pick is a dude and confident we'll see it during the season?
Well, he can confirm that he's a dude and there can be insufficient pop simultaneously. It's hard to bear.
Yeah.
You know, he can make and I think when I wrote about grading the throws, Callahan said, what, you need 5-6 throws in a game?
Yeah.
To win? Well, he can make 5-6 throws in a game. That doesn't fix anything defensively.
Right.
If he makes 5-6 throws in a game, but he makes 2 F throws, well, he's made the A throws, but he offsets 2 of them.
Right.
With the F throws, right? So I think there are a lot of sliding scale kind of elements to it. A
couple of things on the Cam Ward front I want to get into coming up next. We will get into inside linebacker. A lot more of your thoughts and questions for PK on the text line to visit as well. We'll get into all that coming up. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is all about great service. Robbie Stanley alongside Paul Kuharski, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. Taking your questions for PK on the Titans, 615-737-1025. PK, we talked last week about Cam Ward, the offense in general, their performance in day one of the joint practices with Atlanta, not very good. Responded a little bit the second day. They played the preseason game since then and have had a couple of days of practice. So what have you made of the way that Ward has responded since last week's joint practice against Atlanta, the way he played in the preseason game, and what he's looked like to you so far this week?
I think he's been fine. I mean, I think his feet are messier than people. We take the good plays and we break them down intently on film.
Yep.
We being other people who are smarter at film than I am.
Yep.
And then those of us that look at it, you know, Kurt Warner did that great breakdown on the thing. I will say about the Kurt Warner breakdown. Like, did you watch
it? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right. So he wants that slot receiver to run his post further inside, which would have drawn guys into more ideal positions. Yes. But the play worked, right? So the defenders that he wants to be further over and away from Jefferson, sure, that would have been great if they were away. But the fact of the matter is they really didn't affect Jefferson. The throw was there.
Yep.
Jefferson said he should have taken a little better angle and that the throw was there. We all think it was a great throw. We all think Jefferson should have caught it.
Yep.
So everything that Warner wanted would have neatened the play up. But I don't think it was a poorly designed play. I think it was a big gain, successful crosser. Right? So
yep.
I watched that and I thought, this is fascinating. If you take that play and revise it, and I'm sure they will continue to evolve a play. But for a preseason play where you have a couple young guys on the field and you're still working on chemistry and everything, that's a damn good play. So I'm going to defend Callahan, Holtz, DK,
yep,
Jefferson, Ward. I'm not going to defend Jefferson on not catching it, but I thought it was a pretty good play.
Well, I think the footwork thing you bring up is interesting.
He's high and outside. Blake says this. When his feet are bad on those kind of throws he made to Isle Manor to the left,
yep,
high and outside is the result. And look, we all have bad habits. I bite my fingernails. No matter what I do, I can't stop biting my fingernails, right?
Yep.
To the degree, like when I got crowns on my front teeth, the dental hygienist said, well, you can't break your teeth on now. And I thought she meant like the crowns were unbreakable. So I took the freedom to continue. And I broke the crown.
Right.
What she meant is you can't be stupid enough to bite your fingernails and break these crowns, which cost you a lot of money.
Right.
That is not what she meant. I interpreted it as I wanted to rather than as I
should, fair enough,
should have. Yeah. Thank you, Ian. I appreciate that. So he, it sounds like he doesn't step and drive, Holtz said on some of the stuff. He kind of falls backward.
Yeah.
You know, well, he's been doing that and getting away with it. So you say, well, how hard is that to fix? You talk about it a couple times, and then in the moment you think, all right, I need to step and drive. And that's very easy to say. I've come to realize, like, it's BS when, yeah, I say, they're telling him to step and drive. Why isn't he stepping and driving? He's not stepping and driving because he's not been stepping and driving on a lot of these throws for 7 years.
Yeah.
And who has a seven-year habit that goes away in no time? And then you add factors like people rushing at you and a clock in your head and all of those things. Some of these things a lot of smart people have written really don't have a chance to fully resolve themselves until he's been through it, seen the results, hopefully is an uninjured quarterback going into next offseason and really starts from February.
Yeah.
Without a combine to prepare for and all of those interviews, and is working. And by the way, how about how many times already he is campaigning for continuity?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up with you because that has been something big that he's time talked about a lot.
He is tired,
yep,
of change. The change is self-inflicted, yep, right? I mean,
the transfers.
He went from Incarnate Word to Washington State by choice. He went from Washington State to Miami by choice because he had to climb the ladder.
Yeah.
But the side effect of climbing the ladder is I got to relearn stuff. I've got to deal with different people. And that was beneficial to him in that the Titans said, well, he's able to do those things. But now he's saying, I want to be here. I want to build people. Implied there is I want to be built by the same people.
Yeah.
And unless Brian Callahan is really bad, I think when an owner is part of a team selecting a guy number one overall, he's got clout with her. She needs to be hearing that. And it's not as important now as it is if they stink.
No, 4-13. Yeah.
If they stink and he's showing signs and he's campaigning and Brinker's campaigning for continuity. She can't be. The whispers from people close to her who are saying you've got to make a change have to be overwhelmed by louder whispers from Brinker, Borgonzi, and Ward.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, I just gave you a new triumvirate.
Right.
It's not a duo, it's a triumvirate. And Ward's got leverage there.
Well, and he's using it. And that's the other thing.
Like, he's pre-using it.
He's pre-using it. And look, it's going to come down to how well does he play, all those things. But, you're talking about a number one overall pick. And I don't want the conversation to always shift back to Marcus here. But, like, can you imagine Marcus Mariota saying some of the things that Cam Ward has said about continuity? No.
Maybe if his mom told him.
Yeah, I guess my point is, like, we have seen quarterbacks that just will not talk about that stuff. And that's not my job. That's above my pay grade. Like,
I'm out here not warming up early for the game.
Like, Tannehill would offer his opinion on some stuff if you really, pressed him on some stuff. But even he, most of the time, was just like, yeah, I'm not worried about any of that stuff.
Maybe behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And maybe Ward is using publicly. The bully pulpit.
And I find that interesting that he is already basically just leading the charge.
Twice recently.
Before the season even starts, about how much he desires consistency at keeping this thing afloat as they go through the process here.
And it's putting some pressure on those guys. I mean, I don't know if there's any additional pressure to be had, but I mean, I'm sure they appreciate it. This is what you want. They are mutually reliant on each other.
Yeah.
Callahan, Holtz, Hardigree, and Ward. Everybody's relying on each other, you know? Look, if we don't get it done as coaches for him, we're going to be in trouble. And Ward, if I don't play well enough for these guys, this desired continuity isn't going to happen for
me. Well, and you know, we know how things go in the NFL. You change coaches, you know, all of a sudden, I mean, you're not his guy anymore and all those things. Like, it can play out that way. I just found that part of it really interesting because, you know, I'm sure you read TD and Jeremy Fowler's piece earlier this week about Callahan and how close he was to getting fired and all that stuff last year. But, like, I've kind of viewed it this way. I think there are two extremes in this conversation. On the one hand, I think you've got the people that are just out on Callahan before the season even starts, and they think that he's just a dope and has no clue of what he's doing. And then on the other hand, it's like, no matter what happens at all, you have to keep Brian Callahan together because it's better than the alternative of bringing in a different coach. And I think there's a middle ground there where it probably needs to be. Like, we all understand that the roster is in bad shape heading into this year. But I still think, like, it's on Brian Callahan to show you something. Like, right now he's not shown much.
No.
He needs to show you something this year where you've got some confidence on. Because I would argue continuity just for the sake of continuity is just as stupid as firing people left and right all the time.
But is it going to be Adam Gase or Nathaniel Hackett?
I have my doubts about that.
All right. If he's Adam Gase or Nathaniel Hackett, you need to move on. But if he's not Adam Gase or Nathaniel Hackett, if it's not that, then you probably need to stick with it. As much as people may not like the level of progress. And we've already seen things from Cam that indicate, like, hey, they know what they're doing with him. they know what to do with him. You'd like to hear the excuse less with the big Cam evaluation later about it being about what he's surrounded with.
Yep.
And I think you're giving him a chance there. But I also think fans aren't being reasonable. Like, Justin Jefferson is a piece of that. A veteran receiver who knows what he's doing is a piece of that. Is he great? No.
Talking about Van Jefferson.
Yeah. He's not a particularly good player. But they need to be able to draw out of him the things that they saw when they scouted him and decided, look, we're not going to have the luxury of getting great receivers here. And this guy can, at the very least, fill a hole for a while. Io Manor, I like as much as most people like him. But there are some signs that he shows of not readiness.
Yeah.
In terms of using his size and his traits effectively in game. In Atlanta, he had a day where he kind of just got bullied. And I think they had to say to him, like, you be the bully. You've got the size and the qualities to answer that and go up and win that ball. Well, I mean, if he's getting bullied in a practice in Atlanta, what's Denver going to do to him,
right?
So if you can't count on that, well, Van Jefferson knows how to play in an NFL game, and I think people are dismissing that over two drops. You know, I'm no huge Van Jefferson guy.
Right.
But in what they're doing, it makes sense to have him.
I would agree 100%. A couple position battles I want to get into with PK coming up next. We'll continue to take your thoughts, your questions for him as well. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com is with us, taking your thoughts for PK as well. 615-737-1025. Coy in Clarksville on the text line. Do you see Cedric Gray winning the inside linebacker number two spot? Look good in game time playing. So he also asked about Jefferson. We'll get to that here in just a minute. But let's just focus in on inside linebacker and Cedric Gray right now.
I don't think by any means it's determined. But I think Cedric Gray showed very well for himself. Apparently, the officials, I heard secondhand, told Denard Wilson that the penalty called on Gray's interception wasn't a penalty. So that would have, should have counted.
Yep.
Either way, he made the play. I don't think the penalty affected it. He gave pop. I thought James Williams was doing reasonably well, but without the pop. Look, Cedric Gray's better in the middle of the field, right? And Cody Barton is ideally better in coverage. His coverage numbers weren't great last year. I've got a piece coming on Cody Barton. I talked to him about his coverage numbers last year. I read them to him. He disputed. He said that he thinks there's a few things in there that aren't necessarily his or whatever. But nevertheless, he said those are bad and they're going to be better and they need to be better. But James Williams is more of a dropping back linebacker and Cedric Gray is more of a going forward linebacker. Fair, right?
Yeah.
And so I think the pairing maybe is better. Barton ideally can do everything. But I also wouldn't discount, you know, what they might do in big dime.
Yep, for sure. Yeah.
In dime.
Yeah. What is your sense for at this point with one preseason game left tomorrow, where things are headed at punt returner right now?
Yeah, I have a real issue with them using Jaquan Jackson so much. And I asked Fossil about it yesterday.
Yep.
And he said there's seniority involved in it. Now, using seniority as a pecking order element when the senior guy you're giving the rep to is not going to be on the roster makes very little sense to me. I think the ideal scenario for them is that DK be the punt returner because ideally they're keeping six wide receivers. And you need the punt returner, if he's not a defensive back, which he's not going to be, to be one of those six wide receivers. If Prochet is on the roster, he's the seventh wide receiver. If the seventh wide receiver is the punt returner, then guess what? You've got to sit down the sixth wide receiver.
Correct. So he's really the sixth at that point.
Yeah, so then Prochet is the sixth, and somebody else is the seventh. It can't be Oliver is the seventh. Oliver's got to be active on the game day. He's their best gunner by a mile. He's got to play special teams. So then you're talking about DK, and they're not going to sit DK on game days. And so it's really twisted up. So I still think they need to find a way for Chim DK to be the punt returner. That's why I can't imagine that they're not going to try to get DK punt return opportunities in this game. Or wind up counting on DK out of what they see in practice. But Fassel said yesterday he hasn't seen enough of DK to feel confident in him in that job.
Yeah.
I think it is very complicated what's going on at punt returner right now. And I would like to think they'd be far more settled or have clearer paths at that spot at this stage.
Let's stay on that aspect of the game because – look, Johnny Hecker has had a really good NFL career for himself to this point. He's 35 years old. And honestly, I have been less than impressed with him to this point in the preseason. I don't think it's gone very well for him. Now, it's preseason. He's been in the league for a long time. They seem to have confidence that by the time the regular season comes around, he's just going to figure it out. I am a little concerned by what we've seen from him to this point. At some point, these guys hit a wall. And I'm not saying for sure that Hecker has, but it's been a little bit too many shanks going on to this point in camp.
Yeah, one day in the Atlanta practice where he shanked like four out of five punts in a sequence. Fassel, you know, again, is like everybody, be upbeat all the time. But he said something like, I don't have any doubt about him being ready to go on opening day.
I thought I saw Stonehouse got released.
Stonehouse
in Miami.
He's not coming back. Gone. Stonehouse.
So I'm not sure if that would have really been the best ideal situation anyways.
Yeah. I guess Stonehouse just can't learn to not just totally just destroy his coverage out there.
Well, press box talk, as soon as we saw that, of course, went back to our longtime favorite, Aukerman. Aukerman really messed up Ryan Stonehouse with our general.
Maybe he just like got mentally scarred.
He probably that's got himself killed back there. Yeah. And then he got to Miami and was like, oh, God.
I would think he gets another look somewhere. But, I mean, for the guy to do what he did and now be on the street is pretty amazing. I would think there are some teams that want a boomer punter. And if you want a boomer punter, you're not going to find much better than Ryan Stonehouse.
Referring to the kicking style, not the age.
I was going to say, yeah, not old man. No. We got a boomer already.
We got the boomer punter here. Yeah. They took the boomer over the boomer, if you get what I'm saying.
I get it.
And Joey Sly, I think, you know, is locked in. He hasn't missed, you know, too many. He missed extra points of concern, but it's you know, based on what he's done, it's an outlier.
If I can turn my mic on, I'm pulling a Rex rub. You know, Fossil yesterday was talking about the sudden change and getting some practice with that with Joey Sly and the kicker. So we'll see what that all kind of shakes out that way for. But, it, you know, special teams, we saw last year how much of a absolute tire fire it was for them, and it was more in coverage and punt blocks and all that stuff. But it'd be nice to not have some issues on that.
I mean, here's one thing to fear. I'm just thinking of this, but, you know, it took Bill Callahan. The first year of the expected transformation did not go as planned.
Correct.
Can't be that way with Fossil.
No, it's gotta happen pretty quickly. 615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your questions to get to for PK on the Titans front. We will do that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Robe, 1025 The Game. Final segment of the day, PK with me today. He will be with me all show tomorrow as well, so looking forward to that. Taking your questions on the Titans, 615-737-1025 is our phone number. PK, what do you make of where things stand at running back right now beyond Pollard? We know Spears' injury situation. You've got Chestnut in the fold. You had a story at PaulKuharski.com earlier this week about Kalel Mullings and pass protection being an issue right now. So where do you think things stand in the running back room at the moment?
Well, I don't think they could trust Mullings to put him on the field. I don't think regular season-wise he would be on the field in any situation that called for pass protection. Maybe short yardage, maybe help run out the clock up or down late by a decent margin. You know, Chestnut, I think, is on the initial 53, but eminently replaceable. And, you know, we don't have a feel for Pollard, and Spears missing ensures they're keeping four, conceivably five. We don't know how bad that ankle is, you know, if there could be a IR stint there for four games and recall. I don't know. I think they're going to run the ball better. It'll be largely a result of the run blocking of the offensive line.
Yep.
But I think Pollard, while he's good, has a little bit to prove in terms of being the lead guy. And I don't know if he feels that way. He was in some ways best player on the offense last year. I think it'll be more challenging to be that guy this year, especially with Ridley and Ward. And so I think he should feel challenged.
Based on the work that they've gotten into this point, how much do you think Brian Callahan is considering playing Cam Ward starters in tomorrow's preseason game?
I think the tone was that he'll play them, unless I'm mistaken, the same amount that he's played them in the first two games, probably about two series each.
Are you surprised by that it's not more, given the fact that you're taking a couple weeks off before week one?
No, I just think he's being consistent. Minnesota's going to play nobody.
Right.
So, again, they should look good and come out of it feeling confident, even if it's somewhat false confidence. But false but healthy confidence, let's say. If they look bad, that will be,
that'd be a problem.
A big negative.
Well, let's look elsewhere in the division real quick. Daniel Jones, the starter in Indianapolis. So Richardson clearly got to the point where they just could not trust him to look across the line of scrimmage and understand what he was seeing. They've got Daniel Jones out there now, which I think has a chance to be pretty bad. Like, it could be pretty special at the bottom of this division this year between the Titans and the Colts. I have no idea what Jacksonville is going to be. So now that we're this deep into camp, what do you make of kind of where the division stands? What do you make of the Colts' decision to start Daniel Jones? And it's not like it's like Steichen said, our starter for the season is Daniel Jones. Not our starter for week one, our starter for the season. What do you make of that?
I think it's probably in some ways good to make that pronouncement, to let Daniel Jones feel it and let the team feel it. But I think there comes a point, if he's not playing well, where, you know, any quarterback on a bad team who's not playing well, who's got somebody behind him with some level of pedigree, if he's practicing reasonably well in limited stuff, we'll probably get a chance. You know, what's the over-under on Daniel Jones games? 10?
I was going to say 10 and a half, somewhere there. Yeah.
I think the Colts are messy. And I think Steichen and Ballard are in their last seasons there. I think they will be worse than the Titans. The Titans at least have the promise of an upside young quarterback and something to rally around, and maybe started to turn a corner. I think the Colts maybe haven't finished bottoming out. I give Jacksonville some benefit of the doubt. I think they've got some talent, and more talent than the Titans. I don't know about Cohen. I don't know about the young general manager. I think they may come to regret the trade that gives up the spot that they could draft the quarterback in next year that Cleveland now owns. But I put them down for a firm second place.
How much, going back to the Titans, how concerned are you? Are you concerned at all about the amount of time that T'Vondre Sweat has missed
yes.
in camp?
This is something that that has not been talked about. When guys miss a big chunk of camp when they're young, it always, maybe 95% of the time, comes back to bite them. And T'Vondre Sweat has a general fitness issue. He needs to work regularly. And so the abdominal thing stopped him from working for maybe a week, and then tonsillectomy has stopped him from working. Saw him on the patio yesterday, and maybe you know, I know you eat a lot of ice cream when you have a tonsillectomy, but I think your appetite is down overall with that. So he probably lost some weight with that. Can he keep that weight off? What kind of fitness level does he have? And has he stuck to the standards that he set for himself or fallen back into any bad habits? I think those are all fair questions, and we've just kind of let him be off into the side. And missing this time is a significant deal.
I think there's an assumption out there from a lot of Titans fans that he's just automatically going to take a big jump from year one to year two.
I think that's dangerous.
And I hope he does. Because they need him to, and if he doesn't, that's a big problem for this defense because they just don't have enough guys if he doesn't. But I'm with you. Like, I think it's probably something we've not discussed enough of just how much time he's missed in camp. And at the end of the day, like, you know, if he goes out there in week one and looks really good against Denver, nobody's going to care about how much training camp time he missed. But it's something
snaps,
that's been.
How many snaps can he play?
Yeah, how can he? Yeah, it's a great question. I don't know, but he's just not been out there, and I feel like it's something that we probably just really have not discussed a lot to this point in camp.
I would venture to say that is the biggest, excuse the pun, undiscussed thing about the Titans at this point.
Yeah. And again, like everybody, like you point to the strength of the defense, and everybody immediately goes, "What's Simmons and Sweat?" Well, I think Simmons is. Like Simmons, you know, we've
seen
talked
him
about it.
Pretty regularly, yeah. Pretty dominant at practice.
Sweat? I don't know. Like, I hope the ability's clearly there. But, you know, Brian Callahan was talking earlier in the offseason about, like, the next step of getting after the quarterback more and providing some of that interior pass rush. And I just feel like there's some valuable reps that he's missing out on right now. And you don't want him, you know, you don't want him easing into things and it taking him a month into the season before he really gets going. Like, they need him right out of the gate. PK, it's been fun. We're doing it again tomorrow for 3 hours. Appreciate you taking time to be with us today on the program.
Looking forward to tomorrow. Enjoyed being back in. Don't block the box. Be sure to lock your locks.
We'll be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. PK. We'll look ahead with me to the preseason finale for the Titans coming up against the Minnesota Vikings. Jake Lyman is coming up next. You're listening here to 102.5 The Game.